This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello, and welcome to Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at managing herbicide resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. I'm excited to be joined today by special guests John Evans and Kai Teagles. John is chairman of the Landwise Board and a well-known specialist seed producer and arable farmer, who until recently was farming on a 270-hectare irrigated block in Dorey near Ashburton. Kai has a strong farming background as well, coming off a research farm in the Netherlands and was running a roguing company in Canterbury, which has now dwindled back to only potato roguing. John also assists FAR in running their Chertsey arable research site. Now semi-retired, John and Kai have recently moved to a smaller block near Ashburton where they are pursuing native revegetation projects and biodiversity enhancement, as well as running a few Highland cattle. Thanks for joining me, John and Kai.
Thank you.
Cool. You've both had diverse backgrounds covering arable production and agronomy. What has been your on-farm experience with weed management and arable and specialist seed crops? How have things developed in the last 20 years?
Yeah, well, probably in the last 20 years, I think our rotations have got more intense, less opportunity to control weeds. I think 20 years ago we had quite a long pasture phase in the system, which allowed us to help control weeds. Since then, the economics has forced us into having a lot more crops in with our rotation, less grazing. So The effect of that is that you get more weed burden built up, whereas the pasture will take it out, and the downside of no grazing in the system is your soil quality drops off as well. So probably the thing I've noticed is that we've got herbicides have taken off the use, and we've got different weed spectrums, and the weed spectrums have changed over the years depending on what our main herbicide programs were.
Right, so how are your management strategies and practices adapting to that?
Trying to maintain our rotation as wide as possible so we can actually attack the different weeds of different crops at different times. So that's a mixture of grazing in the winter, grazing after grass seed production, spring crops, autumn crops, and even rotating the herbicides within those.
Right. Kai, your thoughts?
I think what is very important these days is that although you're growing, for example, a red beet crop or a carrot crop, your weed control is not only in that season, it's in the next season, the next year in your weed crop, where you can use a lot different chemicals and a lot broader range of chemicals so that you can, we're talking about herbicide resistance. If you can use a lot of different chemicals, then you don't get that resistance so fast.
Right, so maintaining that diversity.
Yeah.
So with your experience as an agronomist, Kai, how do you see herbicide resistance impacting crop management in New Zealand versus overseas?
I don't think it's any different if what we're doing here, what it is overseas. But I do think that with the vegetable seed production, it makes it more challenging in New Zealand. You know, when you have crops like red beet or carrot stay in the soil for 13 months, and that means that, you know, it's a big challenge to keep the weeds down. Hence, you got to have a very wide rotation so that you've got plenty of years to be able to bring that wheat spectrum down again.
So breaking it up after those long season crops.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you put it in a crop that where you can actually do something, like wheat or linseed, but, you know, a pasture phase is actually the best solution. Well, that would be a non-chemical solution, so... And you're restoring the soil a lot better.
And talking about a pasture phase with stock grazing to break up those weed problems, how can stock be a carrier of resistant weed seeds, and how should farmers think about managing that?
Well, one of the protocols for growing an AR crop is that you, before you put stock onto that crop, you've got to empty the stock out for 24, 48 hours, so there is no risk of seed being transferred. It is very important how you manage that. Kai's got a very good example from her experience of roguing of somewhere that's been an issue.
I came onto a farm one day that had a brassica crop early in the season, cleaned the sheep out in the yard. 3 months later, he wanted to clean up a paddock where he was going to put another brassica in, so that, you know, not thinking about what happened 3 months before that. And the sheep ate all that seed that he cleaned out of the header in the yard and shut it all out in the new paddock.
Right.
So he was trying to do a real good thing, a real, you know, the right thing, and it turned out to complete shit.
Yeah. So it's important to have really good record keeping in that sense?
Yeah, no, well... Yeah, in that case, it was just, you know, what happened 3 months later, he still had to think about it. And it was just real bad luck, you all make mistakes, and it was just real bad luck. Yeah.
And the other thing is you think you've been kept the paddock clean and you've made sure that, yeah, there's no seedlings coming up. Brassica's a bad one. You put a brassica and you'll get all the brassica seeds that have been there for the last 30 years. But it's also, I'll just plough out just to make sure it's a good seed bed. All of a sudden you've got stuff that was buried, brought to the top, and you get a problem. So your stale seed bed has got to be a long-term stale seed bed.
Right, not a quick
solution. Possible
several
years, of crops and controlling those brassica weeds.
So we had a chat with Chris Budenhagen last week, who has been Ag Research's lead on the herbicide resistance survey, which, as you know, has been carried out with the help of FAR in Mid and South Canterbury. Were you surprised with the results from this work, and how do you think they're going to impact arable farm practices?
Yes, I was surprised in the extent that they were showing up in New Zealand. Having had experience from travelling in the UK and their problem with blackgrass, I wasn't surprised that there was resistance about. But, yeah, just to the extent. And also, that was mainly a group herbicide. So, and from what I can understand, that when they're resistant to that, there's no option. So you've got, all of a sudden, you've lost a whole group that you cannot use to control grass weeds. And it was mainly perennial ryegrass and a period of Italian ryegrass, but that's probably because it's more perennial growing. But yeah, that means that you've got a long term, you've got to look at a whole lot of different options. Luckily, in that survey, there was no Roundup resistance, but there is Roundup resistance about, so you've got a tool. So let's not overuse any chemical. That's why I say it's rotation crops, rotate your herbicides, you know, and your cultivation methods.
Yeah. And we were talking about that earlier today as well, keeping the Italian really separate from the perennial ryegrass.
Yes. Well, I was an Italian grower, so the Methven farmers think I'm not a proper farmer. but yes, and I would never attempt to grow a perennial, and I'm the scourge of the neighbourhood because I've got Italians. But yes, you've got to be very, very careful, and I know farmers that do both, and the really good ones, successful at it, will have two combines, two farms, and they do not cross. The good contractors in Canterbury know this, and they'll have a baler which is dedicated to Italians and one that's dedicated to perennials, and they will not go on to the opposite farm. Yeah.
So, being champions of biodiversity, now committed to revegetation on your new farm block, what benefits are you seeing with that and weed management? Or perhaps more pests?
More pests,
I think, because our experiences with IPM, Integrated Pest Management, and you get, if you can have a reservoir of beneficial insects like hoverflies and lacewings and ladybirds around the farm, you can actually reduce your amount of insecticide. I think it's for the last 3 years, far I've come out and done a barley yellow dwarf virus survey in cereals in the wheat. So we had 70 hectares of wheat and they never found any, and I never sprayed.
Wow.
I'll do seed treatment as a precaution at the start, but it's getting back to the old tradition when I was started, that you don't plant wheat until after May, so you don't get those early aphid flights. Now we need to plant them earlier, so we've got that seed protection. But if you've got enough reservoir, you do not actually have a yield. But you need that reservoir. You need the biodiversity around the boundaries of the paddock.
Yeah.
I just want to say, that doesn't mean that we didn't have virus.
Yeah.
But it was under the 5%.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Threshold.
Mm.
Yeah. You could see it from the header. It was little spots.
Yeah.
But that was, nothing.
So, Kai, can you talk about some of your challenges that you've experienced with increasing the biodiversity on your farm and how that's impacting how you manage things?
Yeah, I think one of the main things is that you don't get an immediate result.
Yeah.
Or you don't get it. It only costs money at the start, and you got to be quite. Yeah. You just have to bite that bullet,
mm-hmm.
and spend the money, and then later on, you can see some benefits out of it. But it's not all economical. You know, it's not all economics. It's not all money. It's got a lot to do with how we treat Mother Earth, and the biodiversity. And now, after 6 or 7 years, we saw, John just said we saw results. But everybody that drives past the farm always says, "Oh, those plantings are so nice," and I went, "Yeah. Well, you could do the same."
Yeah,
I think that's one of the, for the community aspect, is that aesthetic, which people don't always think about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly a lot nicer to look at that than a gorse fence, or in some cases, just a netting fence. And, and you go see around irrigation ponds, which are a lot around our way, and they're just grazed, growing a little bit of gorse. And you could actually... They're difficult to manage areas. You can actually utilise them for benefit for the long term.
And that's benefit, not only seeing, but bringing the biodiversity back onto the plant, in our case, the Canterbury Plains, is that you're getting that the insect biodiversity, the bees have more fodder, we're getting that natural balance back in what used to be there in when we had a forest on the plains.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that we're going to do in the future. That our little block is going to be a little forest.
That's so exciting. So can you talk a bit about your plan to slowly build up the biodiversity there?
Yeah, we bought a 17.5 hectare block, and at the moment it was a turf grass seed multiplication. So we've got like 17 hectares of lawn.
That sounds like a lot of management.
Yeah. We've got some Highland cattle, so we made pasture out of it. And but over the next 10-15 years, we like to put some Canterbury Plains Forest back onto it.
Great. Mm. So it's a similar message, I guess, from what we've been hearing from the likes of MRF before about you can't assess cover crops, for example, in a short window of economic benefits. No. It's over that long term.
It's a whole system, and it's a long sort of long-term system. You know, the old adage which you used to have, you know, you had a seven-year rotation, be 3 years cropping and the rest of it's in pasture. You know, we've gone down from that to a virtually a five-year cropping with 2 years pasture, if you're lucky, or even 18 months. So, and that's on our soils, on young soils, they came on the wind, they'll blow with the wind, so it's very difficult to manage them. So there's techniques that we can help stretch that cropping rotation with strip tilling and minimum till and direct drilling and so forth. But every time you grow a crop, you're actually decreasing the quality in the soil because you just lose carbon, organic matter out of the soil. It's a natural process. So it's just a long-term thing, and if you can stop using chemicals as much, don't stop using them all. As one of the well-known farmers down our way says, we want all the tools in the toolbox, and I think that's very important, that we keep as many tools in the toolbox. And it's the likes of burning stubble. There's a place for it, but we've got to be responsible for it. And I just remember seeing something in the UK that someone had a fire, got away on them, and they noticed the next year there was no black grass in that part of the paddock. And, you know, when you've got a rotation in the UK of wheat and oilseed rape, all autumn planted, and you've got your main secondary crop is black grass, that was a major thing. And he's actually, the next year he burnt his stubble and paid the fine because he got actually a bigger benefit because he didn't have problems controlling black grass. So right. It's very important we look at Europe and understand their mistakes and don't make them here.
Exactly, and understanding the right tool for the right scenario and challenge that you're trying to address.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much, John and Kai. That's been an awesome conversation and great to hear your insights from many years of farming and agronomy experience. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our generous sponsors. We thank the support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand and Processed Vegetables New Zealand.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.